2 Samuel 13, look at verse number 1, if you will. It came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. The first words there are very important. It says, and it came to pass after this. If we would go back and study chapter 12 and chapter 11, we would find David's sin with Bathsheba, the confrontation by the prophet Nathan. He does go into battle for a time, and then the boomerang starts coming around in his life. This is the kickoff. 2 Samuel 13 is the kickoff of a lot of family trouble in David's life as the result of his sin. Have you ever been troubled on every side? You ever had fightings within and fightings without? In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul writes of that kind of a situation in his life where he says, we're troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. In chapter 7 of the same book, 2 Corinthians, verses 5 and 6, he says, for when we were come into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest, but we were troubled on every side. Without were fightings, and within were fears. He said, when you're troubled on every side, your flesh has little rest. We're in a time frame in David's life. He lived 70 years. We believe that this time frame that we're entering are from 50 to 70 years old. We believe his affair with Bathsheba probably took place somewhere between the ages of 45 and 50 years old in his life. But the time frame that we're entering in his life is a time frame where he's troubled on every side. It's as if he's in the middle of the battlefield and bullets are flying from every direction. Another analogy to accurately portray David's life during this time is when it rains, it pours. Life is full of trouble. And it's increasing trouble. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 12. Go back a chapter. We'll read what Nathan said to David after he told David, thou art the man, after he gave David the parable in which he pointed out his sin. Here's what 2 Samuel 12 says. Now therefore, verse 10, the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me, and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house. And I will take thy wives before thine eyes, and give them unto thy neighbor, and he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of this son. For thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. Often, remember this, often secret sin leads to public judgment. It did in the life of David. David committed something secretly, but God says, I'm going to judge it publicly. And often secret sin in our lives leads to public judgment. I don't think David thought of, as we talked about the hook last week, I don't think that he thought of what his sin would do as far as his household. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 29 says this, he that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind. He troubled his own house, and the trouble came from every side. 2 Samuel 13 all the way through 2 Samuel 15, in these chapters, they expose the trouble in David's house. Amnon, Absalom, Tamar, Jonadab, all of these figures come into play in these chapters as we read about David's house being troubled. Tamar is broken after she's raped by Amnon. She's devastated. She's stunned. She lives a desolate life. Absalom, as a result of Tamar being raped, is bitter and angry and revengeful. Turn to 2 Samuel 13, verse number 20, if you will. By the time we get to verse number 20, Amnon has raped Tamar. And Absalom, in verse 20, says, her brother said unto her, hath Amnon thy brother been with thee? Hold now thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house, broken. But when King David heard all of these things, he was very wroth. And Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. And it came to pass after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal-Hazor, which is beside Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons. And we know that Absalom eventually had Amnon killed. And it's very interesting how he had Amnon killed, because it's very similar to how David had Uriah killed. He waited till he got drunk, and then he had Amnon killed. And Absalom, in one sense, walks in his father's footsteps. And David is angry with all the trouble that now is rising up in his own house. Absalom, that was not the end of Absalom's revenge, because Absalom would go after his father's kingdom. And we know that. Nothing is said of Absalom's wisdom, his fear of God, his tender heart. Nothing is said of a submissive spirit or his pursuit of God. Just his hair and beauty are mentioned in the scriptures. You know, it's possible to have a reputation known for temporal things, but not spiritual. It's possible that you can have a reputation that is good on some fronts in the temporal places of life, in the temporal things of life, but not have a spiritual reputation. Absalom had a reputation. It wasn't one of spirituality. Look at 2 Samuel 14, verse number 25. But in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. For the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. Outwardly, he was without blemish, but inwardly, he was full of blemishes. Listen, this morning, if you're a young person or an older person, it's better to be without blemish inwardly than it is to be without blemish outwardly. The outward means very little in the context of the inward. The Bible talks about a woman that fears the Lord contrasted to beauty and says beauty is vain. But a woman that feareth the Lord, that's the heart, that's the inside, she shall be praised. Be careful to praise people outwardly. Be careful of doing that. That's what they did with Absalom. It went to his head. It did not help him in life. This is only the start of all the trouble. Chapter 15 records Absalom conspiring with Ahithophel, David's counselor. I want you to turn there as we get to the core of the lesson here in just a moment. The Bible says in verse number 2 of 2 Samuel 15, and Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, that being David, then Absalom called unto him and said, of what city art thou? And he said, thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel. And Absalom said unto him, see, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee. Absalom said, moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice. And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Notice in verse number 12, he not only went after the men, he went after David's closest connections, his closest friends, his counselor. In verse number 12, and Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. There came a messenger to David saying, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. Verse number 14, David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword. Can you imagine as a king running from your son? That's what David did. That's what the Bible says about David. That the relationship was so bad that David had to take all of his servants and flee from Jerusalem, David was facing increasing trouble. His family was mangled, twisted, troubled in every way. What do you do in times of trouble? Turn to Psalm chapter 3. Psalm chapter 3. Not only did he have a daughter that was raped by one of his sons, he had a son that killed his other son. He had a son that began to steal the hearts of the people away from him. He lost his confidant, Ahithophel. It's no wonder he wrote in Psalm chapter 3, verse number 1, "Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah." If one child is wayward, it's enough to break a heart. It's enough to cause tears to be upon the pillow. But can you imagine David with all of his family in this sort of mess? His generals and soldiers deserting him? Trouble sometimes comes in flocks. "They are increased that trouble me. Many are they that rise up against me." But Christ could be touched with the feeling of his infirmity. Because Christ, the Bible says, came unto his own, and his own received him not. Satan rose up against him. The Jews despised him. The Pharisees sought to entrap him. Even his own disciples rebuked him. Even his father, for that short period of time on the cross, had to forsake him. He was despised and rejected of men. He was a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. You see, Christ knew what it's like to have a flock of trouble come his way. David, as he speaks to God, is not speaking in unfamiliar terms to someone who could not understand. David is speaking to God in terms that he certainly could understand. And so he writes about the trouble that is increased, your first point on your notes, increased trouble. But that wasn't it. Verse 2 speaks of insulting voices or irritating voices. "Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God, Selah." Not only had David lost the favor of his family, and he had. Not only had he lost the friendship of his counselor, and he had. And the following of his people, and he had. But many were saying this, "David, amidst all that, there's no help for you. Your God can't even help you in all your trouble." Some had concluded probably that David had cut himself off from God. Others maybe concluded that David's God was weak. "Yeah, David, yeah, that God that you serve, that God that you boast about. Yeah, tell me about your God. Look at your family. Look at all the trouble. There's no help in your God." You can hear them speak. David's troubles were too great in many eyes. No one could deliver him from the mess that he was in. David's past was great, but David's present and future seemed to be gone. Some of his friends may have said this with great sincerity and sorrow. His enemies probably said it with intention to insult him and to insult God. "Hey, David, where's your God now? Show me your God now. See, David, even your God's forsaken you. He can't put all these pieces back together." You ever been in a situation where someone said there's no help for you in God? Or maybe you've thought it. Maybe you've gone too far in sin. Maybe you have heard it in your own mind as Satan plants an imagination. Maybe you've heard it from unsaved friends or co-workers as they communicate there's no hope and even insult your God. You ever felt that there's so much trouble, that there's no help for all of this? Spurgeon said this, "David felt this infernal suggestion to be staggering to his faith. If all the trials which come from heaven and all the temptations which ascend from hell and all the crosses which arise from the earth could be mixed and pressed together, they would not make a trial so terrible as that which is contained in this verse. It is the most bitter of all afflictions to be led to fear that there is no help for us in God. May I encourage you as a church this morning, when we are working with one another, we must be people that breathe help and hope in God. Don't breathe hopelessness to another believer. Don't be somebody that tears somebody else down. Don't be part of verse 2, the many which say there's no help. God's not going to listen. No, be a breather of hope and help. David said in verse number 2, at the end of it, Selah. It's interesting at the end of verse 2 of Psalms 3 that God put a Selah. I need to meditate. I need to stop. All of this is coming my way. Trouble is increasing against me. Many are saying there's no help in God, but God put a Selah at the end of verse number 2. He said, better start meditating on that which is right. Better start thinking about that which is right. Turn over to Lamentations chapter 3. Lamentations chapter number 3. Jeremiah had a Selah. Verse number 17. Jeremiah the prophet writes, and thou hast removed my soul far off from peace. I forgot prosperity. You ever had your soul far removed from peace? Soul's troubled. Soul's defeated. Soul's whelming up with all kinds of things that you fear. He says, thou hast removed my soul far from peace. I forgot prosperity. There was a time in life where I experienced it. Boy, I don't experience it today. I said, my strength and my hope is perished from the Lord. Remembering my affliction and my misery, the wormwood and the gall in Lamentations 3, verse number 19. My soul hath them still in remembrance and is humbled in me. And then he had a Selah. This I recall to my mind. Therefore have I hope. What did he recall to his mind? Was it the wormwood? The bitter things of life? The bitter tastes? Was it the affliction? Was it the misery that brought hope? Oh, no. No, no. Verse 22 is where he got his hope. It's of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. And of course, it goes on to talk about great is his faithfulness. Jeremiah had a Selah. Selah means to pause and meditate on. Those of you that are musicians, when music is written with rests in it. You have a rest. That's where you don't play for a beat, or maybe even a measure. You have a quarter note rest, that's one beat. Half note rest is two beats. Full rest is four beats. And David was a harpist. He was a musician. He wrote many of our psalms. When he wrote Psalm 3, verse 2, he said, I need a Selah. I need a time where my mind rests from running on what it shouldn't be running on. And my mind turns to run on what it should run on. He played the harp. We know that. He played it for Saul. Instruments need tuned ever so often, don't they? If you play an instrument, you know that you've got to tune it. You can't just play it forever and always be on tune. You have to take it and go over to the piano or go to have a tuner and get it back up to where it's hitting on pitch again. David in his life in verses 1 and 2 he was not hitting on pitch. His heart needed retuned. And that's why he wrote, Selah. Selah. Trouble increasing for sure. Voices insulting him, irritating him. Oh, absolutely. But he had a Selah, which leads us to number three, an incomparable God. Look at verse number three. After the Selah, but thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head. By the way, this is written when he's having trouble with Absalom, when he's on the run from Absalom, when he fears that his own life and maybe the life of his family and servants will be taken by Absalom and all those that have turned against him. It says, I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. Selah. Think about that. Let me just park there. Let me just think about the fact that when I cry to God, he hears me. That God would take time to hear me. That God would come out of his holy hill, the Bible says, to pay attention to me, to know my trouble, to know what I'm going through. Selah. I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people, in verse number 6 of Psalm 3, that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. And then he writes to end the passage, salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people, Selah. He says, first, thou art my shield. God is our protection, which surrounds us entirely. A shield above us, a shield beneath us, around us, without, within. God is our shield. He wards off the fiery darts of the devil from beneath and the storms and the trials from above, while at the same instant speaks to us calm words of assurance in the midst of a tempest. In Psalm 139, verse 5, it says, thou hast beset me behind and before, and done what? Laid thine hand upon me. In Psalm 28, verse 7, the Lord is my strength and my shield. What does the psalmist say as a result of that truth? My heart trusted in him, and I am helped. Because he's your shield, you can trust him. See, preacher, I have some trouble in my life. He's your shield. You can trust him. He will help. You can wait on him. In Psalm 33, verse 20, our soul waiteth for the Lord. He is our help and our shield. In times of trouble, those are two hard things to do. Number one, trust. Number two, wait. But because he's a shield of protection to us, we can do both of those. We can respond biblically in both of those ways. Number two is my glory. Look at verse number three, Psalm 3:3. But thou, Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head. There is present glory in our afflictions. One of the reasons you go through trouble is so that God might get glory, so that you could picture God as right to others. One of the reasons you go through trouble is so that there is a future glory that God gets in heaven, looking back at what you were able to go through for the cause of Christ. 1 Peter 4:13 says, but rejoice, inasmuch ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. Number three, he's the lifter up of mine head. He takes a sorrowful heart and he turns it to a joyful countenance. Only God can lift up your head. I talk to people that sometimes are depressed. One of the verses I take them to is Psalm 3:3. and say, will you look at God and will you ask God to be able to lift up your head? Because the Bible says that that's one of the things that God does for us. The psalmist could testify of it. What a divine trio in this verse. Defense for the defenseless. David didn't feel like he could defend himself. Glory to the despised. Somebody that's counted so lightly by others. Somebody that's kind of pushed off. Somebody that's substituted for. And joy for the comfortless. I say to you this morning, if you're living where trouble is abounding, you need to retreat from verses 1 and 2 and the heavy conflict in your life. And you need to have some sweet communion with God. Anxiety keeps one awake at night, but time with an incomparable God enabled David's faith to grow where he could sleep at night. Look at verse number 5. After he had cried out to the Lord, after he had known that God had heard him, he says, I laid me down and slept. And I awaked, and the Lord sustained me. Part of God sustaining us is His ability to conquer anxiety and fear and worry in our lives and give us rest. David, because he got alone with God, had confidence and assurance in God. Those things were built up in his life to where he could leave it in God's hands and know that God was going to sustain him. You can imagine David on the run waking up and say, well, I made it through another day. God sustained me. God got me through it. I'm not dead. Absalom hasn't taken my life. The Lord sustained me. If you've been having a hard time going to bed, having a hard time leaving trouble in your life in God's hands, do not underestimate the number of David's enemies. He says, I'm not afraid of 10,000s. There were a number that turned on him. There's a saying that everything looks better in the morning. There's truth for that, but a good night's sleep helps that perspective. David turned his focus, and when he did, he was able to rest. He saw something else, verse number 8. He saw that salvation belongeth unto the Lord. I like that. The reason I like that is because no matter who is trying to stop deliverance from taking place in your life or my life, no matter who's trying to create trouble, no matter who's against you, no matter what is taking place, nobody can steal the salvation that the Lord gives. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. David said, my deliverance. David said, my relief. David said, the things that I'm facing, answers that I need, it belongeth to the Lord. It didn't belong to David. David wasn't going to get it. It belongeth to the Lord. Salvation belonged to the Lord. So in David's life, what he was saying is failure is not the last word. What he was saying was this, our problems in life are not the last word. Conflict is not the last word. Loneliness is not the last word. Guilt and shame were not the last words for David's life. In Psalm chapter 3, salvation was the last word. Blessing were the last words. I want you to know that David's writing this in a time of chastisement in his life. He's writing it where the earth is caving in. But David knew that that wasn't going to be the last word. David realized that salvation belonged to the Lord. Say, preacher, I'm facing some difficult things. I'm facing intense conflict. I'm facing loneliness. I'm facing problems that I can't solve. I'm facing guilt and shame over some things. Yes, but salvation is of the Lord. And the Bible says that blessing, God brings blessing to His people. Though David was filled with guilt and shame and humiliation, and we know from studying chapter 13, he was filled with anger. He was angry at what was happening in his family. He felt insecure in running from Absalom. God was giving him something greater. God was giving him himself. God was saying, I'm your shield. Even in times of chastisement, I'm your shield. I'm your glory. I'm the lifter up of your head. I can lift your head off those things. I can turn your focus to what it needs to be turned to. That's who I am, David, for you. I'm your sustainer. I make sure you make it through every day. David came to the conclusion in Psalm chapter number 3 that all that he needed God to do was to arise. I want you to look at it in this passage. Psalm chapter 3, I believe it's verse number 7. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God. For thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. I'll not be afraid of 10,000s of people in verse number 6 that have set themselves against me round about. Can you get the picture? The picture is this. David says, I have lots of people that are round about me that are against me. Lots of them. But all of them that are round about me, I have a shield that's round about me that keeps them from me. And the shield is who? God. And it doesn't matter if there's 10,000s. That's why David could write here. Though there are 10,000s of them out there that are against me, they can't come through the shield that God is to me. Maybe in your life, there are troubles round about you. There are fears within. There are fightings without. But David said, Selah, let's think about some things. I have a shield. That's protection. He's the lifter up of my head. Amidst all that going on, he says, lift your head up. Look at me. Think on me. Cry unto me. I'll hear you in my holy hill, he says. He says, I can lay down and sleep because the shield's there. I know there's a lot out here, but the shield is around me. Brethren, have you been looking at verses 1 and 2 and saying, there's increased trouble everywhere? Everywhere I look in my life, there seems to be trouble. Have you looked at verse number 2 and said, I don't even think God can help me. I don't think God can do anything about it. Maybe somebody has told you that. Maybe somebody's mocking your God. You can spend all your time in verses 1 and 2. But I'll tell you what will happen. Your confidence and assurance in God will go right down the drain. You won't sleep. Anxiety and fear and trouble in your heart will only grow. It won't only cause you problems in your heart. It'll cause you physical problems. It'll cause you rest problems. It'll cause you all kinds of trouble until you get to the end of verse number 2 and say, Selah. I've got to think about some things other than what I see. I got to take time to walk through verses 3 through 8. I got to spend more time there. I think it's interesting that he writes two verses that are hopeless, and he writes six verses that are full of hope. He knew where to park his time. And you've got to know where to park your time too. When trouble comes, is it going to come, preacher? Oh yeah, it's going to come. It comes in flocks sometimes. Sometimes it just comes. And you think, can you add anything else to this load? Sometimes it comes that way. Sometimes there's irritating voices. There's insulting voices that come in addition with that. But the first word in verse number 3, there is an incomparable God. Take all that, put it up against your God, and it can't compare. When trouble comes,